of Education, thanks for turning my mic on. Work session today is Tuesday, July 16th, 2024. The time is 5:30. Jamie, could we have roll call, please?
Yes, Dr. Behrens.
Mouth is full, and I'm here.
Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr.
Here.
Here. Could we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, discussionary items. I will turn that over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right. Well, good evening, everybody. First up tonight is Project Lead Their Way. So, David, I'm giving it to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. We've got a couple different presenters here today. James, the floor is yours.
Man, you are anxious. I like that.
So this is something that we've been talking about doing all year and thinking about student opportunities. And I know James and Megan and Carly are going to talk about that. And I know that you've seen this in board briefs a couple times. We are going to go through some slides. There is a brief video at the end, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions. So.
Thank you. So the Project Lead the Way will enhance our educational offerings and improve student outcomes, we believe. Project Lead the Way focuses on project-based learning, which is where we're headed as a school. We feel like we need to improve engagement with students, and the engagement will then lead to better attendance, which will then lead to higher graduation rates and hopefully better opportunities for students after they leave Orchard. It aligns with our district goals, and you'll see that in the presentation, of increasing student engagement and attendance. Project Lead the Way has been successfully implemented in various educational settings. And Monroe High School a few years back had a very successful year with it. I didn't follow exactly how it played out, but I did get to see how they used it. And Alka Pandia and a couple other people led that, and she's been helpful with us to make some connections and get some ideas and kind of give us more background on what it really is, other than just the website, and then working with some of the employees from Project Lead the Way, some of their trainers and their salespeople and whoever else. It includes urban, suburban, and rural schools. Research indicates that the benefits of Project Lead the Way are consistent across different demographics, making it an equitable approach to education. So, one of my things, when David and I and we were talking, one of the first things that popped in my head was this idea of equity of opportunity. Our students at Orchard, I mean, you guys know who they are. They come from varying backgrounds. They come from traumatic backgrounds. When they come to us, sometimes they're not ready yet to learn, but our patience and our guidance and our working with them gives them the opportunity for that pause, you know? And so we get the opportunity to give them that. We also want to provide them opportunities similar to what they would experience in other environments, especially as they grow more accustomed to knowing what it takes to be a high school student. Sometimes there's a delay in that for them. We feel that this is one of those opportunities. Last year we had a STEAM class with Pam Vincent. It went very well. She did a lot of project-based learning, had a lot of engagement. She worked tirelessly for that, and she's one of the teachers that has volunteered her efforts for this program. So she's excited about it. So OCHS will be offering this as part of our STEAM class over the next 3 years. It's a 3-year commitment in the beginning. First year would be one form of it in STEAM, then the second year would be two forms of it, and the third year would be a continuation. So we'd be looking to form a cohort of students 1 year and then a cohort of students next year. part of it, this is also part of student interest conversations last year. We talked to several of our students. We have 15 to 20 students that were interested in some form of medical career. Their ideas, a lot of them were medical careers that were kind of low end. And I don't mean that harshly or negatively. It's just entry-level jobs. Because they're not necessarily in families that have higher-level positions. They don't have family members that are necessarily in high-level positions. So they need those experiences that maybe we had when we were kids. Now, I didn't really have that. I didn't know what I wanted to do. My dad was a factory worker, and my mom was worked at a diner. I didn't know anything about. Yeah, I thought I wanted to be a businessman, but I never really knew what that meant, so I went into teaching instead, and I really enjoy it. But it worked out differently, you know. And I want to give those opportunities to our kids too. So we would be partnering. The part of this program is partnering with local medical institutions. Last year, we had ProMedica come in a couple times. They did some work with our students. They did like a day-long in-service type of thing with them, like a professional development for kids kind of thing. And they really had a good time with it. We've had several kids express interest in that, and it will help. It'll be a credit class, so it'll help them toward their graduation requirements. MMS also is looking to offer their type. Ours is gonna be more biomedical. Theirs is more like flight and space, app creators, and medical detectives as part of their enrichment opportunities. I think they're still working out. I'm not sure if you guys have a complete idea yet what you're doing as far as whether it's after school, in school, or, but they have a plan, they're working on a plan for that. So, and also in your board briefs, there was information from the 19th and the 26th. I guess for me, really, it's just about creating opportunities for students, more opportunities for them to have opportunities to like see beyond what their current situation is, see possibilities in the future. If you're limited with what you experience, it's hard to see what could be. And it's, we want to provide those opportunities for them. We believe this would be part of it. Yep. That's pretty much what I wanted to say about it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
So as James said, thinking about providing equity and opportunity to increase student achievement, we thought about what high leverage data points would be most interesting to think about as we made this decision for Project Lead the Way. We know the district has lots of things going on, lots of investments in people and finances into increasing student achievement and making this a destination district. As you can see, we have attendance data from the past 3 years for the average number of absences per student, and we're trending in the right direction as far as absences per period absences go.
I hate to interrupt you, but is that absences days?
Nope, it's hours. Per period absences. Okay. So every hour.
I was gonna think, oh
yep.
My God.
Yep. No, per period absences.
Okay. I was thinking, though, along that line, because my question was similar, but I was thinking, how many hours is that a proportion of the total? So if you say 133 hours, what would be the totality of hours?
Divided by seven.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So 401 divided by seven.
Should be in school 1260 per year.
Okay.
So because we're talking about 7 hours per day, so 7 times 180.
So that would be 1260.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the middle school.
I'm sorry.
For the middle school.
Okay.
So ours is slightly different than that.
Orchard would be 1080.
Tell me that again.
Orchard would be 1080.
And well, I'm sorry.
So that's 1260. So when a kid misses one day of school, it essentially marks them absent 7 times.
And ours is 6.
Mm-hmm. So this is approximately 12%, 11 or 12%
of the. That would probably be pretty close.
Huh?
Yeah. Middle. And again, I mean,
really
taking that number,
absences.
That number seems really high. To me, that number even seems really high, but you have to think about, we have a handful of kids that we have to mark absent all day long because they haven't dropped from school and gone somewhere else yet. So all of those absences count toward us in this number as well. Like when you're saying 19 days, the average student does not miss 19 days of school.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. How does this data correlate to moving on if we're not quite sure what we're capturing here for data?
Well, I think we're sure. We know that that number represents the per period absences as an average for a student. But what you're saying is you're looking at it more holistically and wondering how does that represent what a student is supposed to be in school, yeah. Which is data that we can...
We're talking 19, what did you say, 19?
The 133 mm-hmm. days.
19 days per student, like that's astounding. I don't know about you all, but I don't remember seeing those numbers.
It'd be nice to pull those out then.
100%.
Yes. 100%. Yes, because they're outliers that would make a difference.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It'll change your percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hugely.
Maybe in a benefit way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anecdotally, in our building, a lot of the reason why students end up at Orchard is because they're credit deficient. And then a lot of reasons why they're credit deficient is because of their history of absenteeism from school. If we start looking at it case by case, I could generalize it by saying they have family situations and they have traumatic situations mm-hmm. that preclude them from coming to school on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to overcome these types of programs are created to create higher engagement so they want to be there.
Yes.
Wasn't it that the sheriff had a program? The sheriff's department committee gave us a presentation on the whole absenteeism. Mm-hmm. It was Jeff Yorkey's office, prosecutor's office.
Mm-hmm. You may have been there. Yeah.
They came in and gave because they have a plan they're working too, and I know it's working in coordination with mm-hmm. the school. So this is an addition to that.
It's a little bit different pathway. The prosecutor's office will be more like a punitive approach. This is more of a proactive approach to create engagement where they want to be there.
Yep. So we wanted to make sure that we were keeping an eye on absences and making sure we continue to trend in the right direction. We feel like Project Lead the Way would benefit and make them want to come to school more and therefore create opportunities where they're more engaged. We also wanted to pay attention to the average suspensions per student. And again, trending in the right direction, but if students are engaged and want to be in school and are presented with something that's meaningful and authentic to them, they will be less likely to have lots of free time and hurt people.
How confident are you that this number is right? That students average nine suspensions per student?
So that's, again, an average. So there would be students that make that number go up, and there would be students that don't have any.
Are you using 133, or are you using the total number?
The total number of students at the building, and based on the total number of suspensions.
We need a benchmark.
Yeah.
What we're
mm-hmm.
I do think that, I mean, like, this number is great for data purposes, but if we have a student who was expelled from school, that child, let's say they got expelled in October, a long-term suspension in
mm-hmm.
October, that student might have 140 days that they're suspended.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to get tacked on to every other
yeah.
student.
You
mm-hmm.
might need to do a bell curve, pull out those outliers,
100.
And then get your median.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Then it's probably a little more accurate to those not nine.
But an average is an average. Can say if everything was equitable amongst everybody, that's what it would be. So that is the average number if everyone had the same number of suspensions. So thinking about decreasing the chronic absenteeism and decreasing the number of suspensions, we had three particular Board of Education and Superintendent goals that we wanted to focus on, and we feel like Project Lead the Way could support that, and the first one being student achievement. Project Lead the Way is effective in STEM fields, and there's lots of research to support project-based learning and allowing those students who participate in project-based learning. They generally measure better on assessments that go deeper into knowledge rather than rote memorization. And I'm going to turn it over to Carl.
Well, thanks, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
And Carly, would you talk a little bit about how this is going to be implemented at the middle school
Sure.
before you go into this?
So when we were first approached with the idea of Project Lead the Way. We did some research. I was a science teacher at the time, and we looked into the program. And we saw an opportunity outside of the standards, of the NGSS standards that we're required to teach by the state, into high-interest areas that the students might be more engaged in. And so we had three science teachers who had volunteered that they would like to have this opportunity to provide the Project Lead the Way gateway sessions to students. And they chose flight and space based on their students' conversations. They chose app creators, which that one is a very high interest gateway to be able to create an app. That's where our world is going. And they chose medical detectives, which kind of leads into that biomedical science that's offered at the high school. And so with these three programs, we're talking about offering them during the enrichment hour. So each student has 6 hours of the day. They have four core periods. They have an exploratory, and then they have an enrichment. And so during the enrichment period would be a time where they could take one of these courses. And we've also talked about offering it after school as an after school club to reach students that might be in band during their enrichment class or might have a different enrichment. They might need extra help in math or reading, and so they could come after school and do that, have that experience for science as well. So that's our idea for implementing Project Lead the Way at the middle school. So we're hoping that this program will help increase engagement, that students will want to be in school to go to that program or to come to their enrichment course.
And before you go on, I wanted to say, because we're using words that are kind of, they also have like multiple meanings. So this is not a curriculum.
No.
And this is not a course. This is a supplement to what we're already doing to increase student engagement and interest and expose students to things that they're curious about. We're not doing any new course proposals or anything like that.
We're not replacing anything we already do.
I'm going
to
cross that one off.
Right.
Okay. I think one of the words that Mr. Malalepsa used was exposure. By us being able to provide this exposure to kids at a young age in the middle school only opens doors for them. And it might close some doors that they might think they want to go in the medical field, and they might say, nope, totally not for me, which I think only helps them grow as individuals.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions before I proceed?
Do you have any examples, you know, for like flight and space or medical devices, kind of what they would be, what would
be
presented?
So we have a video that will explain some of that in just a minute.
Okay.
Great. All right, so the next goal that we think Project Lead the Way will help with is the graduation rate. So the engaging nature of project-based learning can also contribute to lower dropout rates. When students are actively involved in their learning and see the relevance of their education to real-world scenarios, they're more likely to stay in school. So with Project Lead the Way, their focus is project-based learning. So students will develop their critical thinking skills, they'll be able to collaborate, and they'll be able to communicate better, and that will help them in the future to be successful. And then the third goal was engagement. And project-based learning is known for its ability to actively engage students in their own learning process. This approach transforms students from passive recipients of information to active problem solvers, making learning more relevant and meaningful. When students are engaged in their learning, they're more likely to attend school consistently. So we're hoping that that data of the absenteeism will improve by this engagement and this exposure. So we have a quick 5-minute video that summarizes what Project Lead the Way is, because it's really hard to put into words what it is, so you need to see it.
Maybe it goes like this from far away.
Oh, it might be a lever. I get it.
All of these are connected, and then it connects to the battery.
I like working on robotics and using mechanical arms and phlebotics and effects all at the same time, trying to get them to talk together.
Learning problem-solving skills that Project Lead the Way curriculum teaches you is going to help you in whatever field that you go through.
You're working on something huge, and you're making a huge impact.
You walk into a PLW classroom, what you find is tremendous excitement and passion.
not only from the teachers, but from students.
Project Lead the Way is great in that there's so much hands-on. Every activity we do gives the kids the chance to have a more in-depth understanding.
With like your biology class, you kind of hit certain points, but then with the biomedical classes, you go more in-depth with diseases and heart functions and body functions.
Project Lead the Way has five programs, all of which are designed to prepare students for post-secondary education and careers in the global economy. Launch is for students in kindergarten through fifth grade, designed to capture their interest in and spark a lifelong passion for math and science. Our Gateway program for students in sixth through eighth grade is a series of nine-week units that continues to engage students' natural curiosity and problem-solving and shows them the relevancy of math and science in their lives. And we have three high school programs. The engineering program is a series of full-year courses that gives students a deeper look at the engineering design process and teaches them to think critically, solve problems, and to collaborate. In our biomedical science program, students explore human medicine, public health, human body systems, and medical careers. And finally, our computer science program, which is designed to build student interest and engagement in computer science, develop computational thinking skills, and explore topics like programming, data mining, and cybersecurity. When we think of the STEM pipeline in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, it's clear across our nation that we have a shortage.
This is where the jobs are. This is where the future is. There's a national interest. There's a national security interest. There's just a ton of reasons to get better in science, technology, engineering, and math.
We want students to understand that when they leave high school or they go into college or post-secondary education, they go to the workplace, they're not going to find themselves isolated and as single problem solvers, but rather as group problem solvers.
They're not given a textbook answer. There's not a textbook lab to follow. They really have to think of their own problems and their own solutions.
We learned how to calculate the stress throughout every part of a bridge. That's how we determined how to build our bridge. We knew we had to put support right here, so that it didn't collapse right away.
We have to think differently about the way we engage students. So we spend a lot of time training teachers, helping them learn to teach differently.
We have teachers that go to summer training every year, and they take the Project Lead the Way courses. When they come back to us, they're teaching us current stuff that's in the field today.
This is a big component of the course, working through this and practicing it, asking each other questions and talking through it. Hopefully we're going over the questions the students will have.
Our students do better, they persist, they outperform, and most importantly, they get excited about learning.
All of our students who have participated in Project Lead the Way, their tests on ACT are through the roof.
It's also going to help them perform better in college and later in life because you're introducing skills that will be beneficial to them.
I already know that when I go into college, I want to jump right into engineering. I definitely feel like being exposed to it for 4 years, I can't go a year without it.
Education is complex. That's why our partners are so important. Our university partners in helping with outreach and professional development of teachers, engaging with our students, recruiting our students, but also all of our corporate partners. And we have both national partners and partners across America that understand the importance of this work, but have also recognized how important Project Lead the Way is to America's economy and improving educational outcomes for all students.
And Project Lead the Way, it combines Cargill's philanthropy with the active volunteerism of our employees in a number of locations. So in that regard, I get very excited by the way in which Project Lead the Way carries out its work.
The students coming through our program have developed critical skills and knowledge that are highly desirable in the marketplace. So that's why universities and companies are recruiting our students.
They're more successful. It works.
It's the best package I've ever seen.
Project Lead the Way has influenced me because if I would have never taken classes like this, I would have never had those options for me. I would have never had that experience.
Taking these type of courses is a huge advantage.
I'm so thankful for having such a good program like this.
I'm so happy that I found PLTW.
Now it's definitely one of the things I'm thinking about doing as a career because I really like this class and it's a lot of fun.
It's definitely something you should take. It's a life-changing experience.
Maybe it goes like this.
What Project Lead the Way is a little bit deeper. So you had asked about the flight and space So I looked it up really quick. And it says students become engineers as they design, prototype, and test models to learn about the science of flight and what it takes to travel and live in space. They solve real-world aviation and space challenges and plan a mission to Mars.
So I'm sure you may have some questions. I did want to disclose that you've seen the budget in board briefs and how it I guess works and plays out. When I look at numbers, I don't like numbers. I don't like looking at numbers. I don't balance the checkbook. And when I'm putting together a budget with Cassie and the building principals, we know that it's not your traditional. I don't want to knock on some of the projects that maybe we did in school where you get out the toothpicks and the wood glue and you build a bridge, but it's a little bit more sophisticated with that across the board with what it asks students to do and how we support those students with equipment and experiences. So you can see that they're not, you know, building bridges with toothpicks and wood glue. They're using, you know, real world items. Each course does have a list of, they're not consumables. They're durables. And once that package is purchased, we are responsible for the consumables every year to replace those. And while the price is in, you know, the tens of thousands of dollars after year three, when our folks are trained and we have our courses and kits in place, the consumables and the access to do those courses are roughly, what did I say?
Can you run the numbers?
Sure. They're in board briefs, but that's okay. So we're using 31A, we're using our at-risk money, 24-25, the consumables and durables are $28,700. We add a course the second year, and that's a high school level courses. The high school level courses are a bit more sophisticated with the types of equipment that they use. Second year is $42,300. The third year, after we have all of our courses in place, all of our durables, and we're really only spending consumables, the budget is $12,600. And then to continue that and sustain that with the courses that we have without adding anything, it's that $15,000, which is the consumables and then access to the courses.
That covers what grade levels?
That covers grades 7 and 8 with the three courses that they have that are taking place in enrichment, and then after school opportunities, and then human bodies and biomedical innovations. Thank you. At Orchard. And you know, it's not something fixed that to say that this is where we want to stop, but we have to see where it goes and review the data and, you know, how successful it is.
And how many students are we anticipating will participate, let's say, the first year?
Angela, can you answer that as far as you have three? Go ahead.
If we had three teachers able to teach it, we probably would only be able to offer one. They would only be able to teach it once, either a quarter or once a semester. Once they get into it, like they said, 9-week course, that'd be great. Then a teacher could teach it four times throughout the course of a year. If they're teaching it four times, they might be able to hit 100 kids mm-hmm. per class. So that might be 300 kids throughout the cycle.
And then James, are you able to speak to Orchard and what that looks like?
It would be 15 to 20. But our population is between 110 and 120, so it'd be about 15 to 20%, somewhere in that range. The first year, the year-long commitment, like a cohort, follows throughout the whole year, and then the second year we would double that because it'd be two classes running during STEAM type classes, the project and the program. Two different. We have a luxury right now. Fortunately for us, we have two teachers that are science certified, and they both of them volunteered for this program. So the second year would bump up to anywhere from 30 to 40 students having this opportunity.
Now, James, that's capacity. What's the mean, what's the involvement? I mean, have we tested the water as far as who wants to enroll in this, for example, and see if anybody wants to sign up, or is that just...
They'll be enrolled.
There is not a lot of flex with students. A lot of students being credit deficient, there is not much flexibility in how those students earn those 19 credits at Orchard. So
right, and then the STEAM credit will be something directly used toward their 19 credits they need to graduate. We don't have the luxury of Monroe High School that can offer a bevy of different elective type opportunities. And quite honestly, this probably 75% of our students are credit deficient. They've pretty much given up that opportunity for the wide selection because they just don't have time to take those classes. This would be tailor-made right for their schedules. We go schedule by schedule, plug it in to make sure they graduate in a reasonable amount of time.
I know there's some discussion that perhaps we can have some of these after school. Is that also going to be the same at Orchard, or is that?
We have offers after school programming offered for the students. Most of the time it's credit recovery types of situations where students finish classes that they haven't completed yet. We're moving toward a position of students getting incompletes and not Fs.
So wouldn't that be in these programs? It'd be actually part of the programs.
This would be part of the program during their school day, yeah. And if we saw the desire and the need, I'm sure that there could be extra opportunities after school, especially pursuing potentially down the road co-op opportunities related to the medical field with our students. We're developing those types of planning right now. There potentially could be a pseudo club type of situation where a student was working on something during the day and the teacher determined there are 3 or 4 or 5 students that wanted to work after school to continue a project or to look into more depths of a project. I'm sure that, especially Ms. Vincent, the first year, she's already offered her time after school.
Oh, great.
We don't know exactly how specifically that time will be used because we have some other things going on at the school for like a 2 and 3 year down the road type of thing with project-based learning, and this will be part of it.
Good. Dave, that's all 31A.
Yes, sir. 31A for the consumables and durables and access to the courses.
So no cost outside of that?
The teachers who are being trained, it's a pretty rigorous 80 hours for the high school courses. So we're offering them the standard rate, but using Title II funds, which we've done in the past.
Pam Vincent, I'll speak to that just
yep.
for a second. Pam Vincent, I've been talking to her. She's vacation right now in the Upper Peninsula. We've been texting. She's going to be signing up for training in August. It's a 2-week commitment, 40 hours a week for 2 straight weeks. And you can't miss the time either.
Yep.
And at the end, she'll receive a certification. Once she receives the certification, it'll show that she's done the work necessary to earn a stipend that will be provided for her for that work.
And they did, I guess the training is rather pricey too, but the middle school and Orchard did receive grant funding from Project Lead the Way to pay for that training. So
we earned a $14,000 grant that we wrote to the company. It was fairly extensive. We earned that and it helped defray some of the costs, especially of the training and the like the fee that would be involved with purchasing the program. Not necessarily the durables and consumables, but the other things related to it. Because there's a lot of support that goes into this company as far as their need for like their technology supports, online supports, people support that will be using. And we get that opportunity through the grant.
Well, thanks for whoever made the application for the grant.
There are several people involved. Yep.
If you can thank them all on behalf of the board, I'm sure we'd all appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks for the grant writing out there. Is there here?
And I just want to say, like, the teachers at the middle school, we have 3 teachers that signed up to do this. We have 2 of them that are veteran teachers. These are 20-year teachers that can't wait to get their hands dirty with this stuff to be able to share. So to see that passion exude out of them, like, it was me teaching grammar to ELA kids, right? Like, they want to do it. Like, they're excited to do it. And I think you saw that in the video with when you have that combination from the teacher and with the kid to engage in that, great things can happen. Great things can happen.
Am I up?
You're up.
So, I don't know.
Your microphone. Okay.
We do so for the recording.
Okay. Just a couple things, because I hear stuff and I make notes just because for clarification. So how much is it to purchase the program? I think I missed that. And I know it's in board briefs, but I...
Yep. So year one...
No, so that is purchasing the program. I thought that was your consumables.
Well... Okay. Yep. And it is I don't know.
Okay, go.
All right. Year one, $950 is covered by Project Lead the Way, as well as $3,600 in the professional development for the middle school teachers. Each teacher in the middle school, it's 20 hours of training. That's $1,310. At the hourly rate that we provide teachers for PD.
Is it 40?
It's 40.
40. Okay. I'm trying to think of how you want me to break this down so it makes sense.
No, you can just give me straight up the purchase, because we already got the 31A money.
Yep.
And so I heard someone say about purchasing the program, which sounded different than the yearly cost for consumables. And
it's not a purchase of the program. There would have, if we'd not gotten the grant, there would have been a need to purchase the actual access to the program. And the
okay.
People. With the grant, which was representative of $14,000, that's...
Oh, great. Okay.
That doesn't have to do with the durables, consumables, and stipend.
Okay.
Separate things that would have been over and above what we're asking.
Okay.
I can put something together for board briefs tomorrow to break down. How do you want it?
Well, I just want to know how much it's going to cost.
Okay.
And so it sounds like right now this is middle school, right?
Yep.
And you gave us the number for middle school, but I heard you mention younger grades in high school, and so when do you anticipate those being implemented?
Outside of Orchard in the middle school?
Yes, because you mentioned, someone mentioned
it was just in the video. They had mentioned there's different programs.
But you mentioned high school stuff.
James mentioned the high school did have something years ago that ran for about a year for Monroe High School.
So it's only for Monroe Middle?
This is for Monroe Middle and Orchard.
Okay, that's it.
That is it.
There's no plan to implement this elsewhere.
There is not a...
Not at this
there
time.
Is not a plan at this time.
Okay. Just because I was trying to keep up with what the
I understand.
Language was. Was there a program recently that got brought in and it was discussed that it was going to be used during enrichment time? And I can't remember what it was. And it was like, it's not going to affect teaching because it's during... It wasn't Trojan Family time.
Oh,
is that
no.
Different than enrichment?
No, I think... Are you referring to our...
it was just
the tutoring program that we're using, BookNook?
Maybe that's what it was.
What you're referring to.
Yeah, and wasn't that also to be used during this time?
It can be, yep.
So...
But yeah, remember, like in the middle school, not every student is going to have access to that program.
We don't... At the elementary, we don't use BookNook, but maybe Trails? Is that... Maybe that...
No, he's right. It was
BookNook.
BookNook.
It's new. We just started it.
Yeah.
No, we just started this summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
and so the conversation was, it was during this enrichment time, which is different than Trojan Family time. Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So BookNook hasn't... I don't know the timeline for BookNook to make its way into the middle school, but I don't think it's this year.
And
it's a K-8. It's K-8.
Right. Andrea would answer
K-8
that one.
K-8 is middle school.
Right, but
summer school.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, BookNook starts at summer school, and it's for our elementary school students right now.
Yep.
I don't know anything about the secondary level, but we've been pulling kids daily for the BookNook experience.
I just thought it was at the middle school.
And it could
for some reason, I thought that was at the middle school, because we talked about using this time. So I'm just saying, if we're plugging everything into this time, how many students, like,
that would be able to do both of those?
So every seventh, well, they wouldn't be able to do both, but every seventh grader, it is our hope that every seventh grader, and sometimes with schedules, it makes it difficult if they have band, choir, or orchestra, that they get an enrichment time. So if they are struggling in a reading or a math area, they are with their reading or math teacher during that enrichment time. So these classes would be offered during with the science teacher during that enrichment period.
So what if they need that help and their enrichment period's already used up? It's kind of like you just don't get to do it.
You might not get to do, like, and I look at this as, some of this is like an extension, right? So when we talk about enriching the experience, if a student is struggling to be on grade level reading, that's probably top priority. Or if they're struggling with being on grade level for math, that's probably top priority. Yeah. And working with them in that area. But those also change every 9 weeks.
Yeah.
So just as this Project Lead the Way is a 9-week course, if Mrs. Smith is teaching this at the middle school, every 9 weeks she could get a new set of 25 kids. And if those kids were struggling first quarter and they were with their reading teacher, third quarter they could be in this Project Lead the Way and have been moved out of the reading enrichment class.
Yeah. I totally get what you're saying, but you know, we look at what the grades are and, you know, where kids are scoring and whatnot. And so we go, how many kids are struggling? Well, the numbers are what, Tom? A lot of kids are struggling. So if they need that time to help them struggle, all I can think of is these kids that are struggling with that could use this. And they're not going to be able to get it, which is a hands-on. And some people that struggle in other ways, you know, mine can work hands-on in a whole different capacity. You go back to those different learning styles, kinetic and verbal, and I don't remember what they all were now. But so I'm just thinking about, you know, people, we talk about equitable, and some of you are more versed on how that applies to an education system. But when I see that, I say, how is that possible with the structure as it is?
And speaking to the high school, with the equitability in this, in our STEAM class, a lot of it is project-based learning. So the way Pam works is she gives the kids multiple ways of showing their learning. Some of it's conversations. It's not all just reading and writing or strict math. There are multiple entryways into showing competency. And so this program would be also probably very similar to that. Kids are allowed to work with their hands. They can show their intelligences in different ways. And a lot of that will be just sitting and talking and learning and listening.
I wasn't suggesting replacing what is a foundation of being able to function in a society. I wasn't thinking of replacing that at all, but I understand your concept. But I don't think that should be replaced.
And at the middle school, we do have two periods. We have an enrichment period, and the students do have an exploratory period.
So what are they doing there?
Exploratory is where we have a careers class, we have a STEM class, we have team sports. So it's a different rotation of classes that they could take. And once we got rolling, that could potentially become an exploratory class, so it wouldn't compete with that same time in their schedule.
So how many hours are the kids in school?
How many class periods? They have
six hour class periods, right?
Plus their TFT time.
So this, yeah. So
and
that
they have four cores.
So they have four core.
Yeah, and then they kind of optionals.
Okay.
So our seventh graders take their four cores, their enrichment, and their exploratory. Some of them, their exploratory is their band, orchestra, or choir.
Huh.
And then they still have one free period throughout the day if they've taken that as a choice.
I just think, I'm just always looking at, if we're putting too much instead of just focusing on what the core we have that is working.
Tom, any questions?
No.
Larry?
Sounds good.
No, I think maybe, to Darla's point, if we could get those students to do the after-school stuff, I know that's probably pulling teeth, but that would be the ideal situation where they could, you know, do the remedial stuff plus have this opportunity, if we could offer an after-school.
Yeah.
But if
for those students that need that time, but still want to be involved in something like that.
Like James said, if he has an instructor that's willing to do after class, that would be
right.
Great. So
yeah.
Hope it works.
Scott, you got anything?
Home, yeah. That's a good question Tom brings up. How do we, James, have them stay after class, after school, for an extra hour or whatever, do we bus them home or how?
We have an opportunity. The transportation department works with Monroe Middle School for their SST program, which is their after school tutoring program.
Okay.
For our school, we work in conjunction with that. So they'll pick my students up either before or after their students as part of their loop. Usually it's two buses, and they will take the students anywhere within our footprint as long as they're going to some place that Power School okays.
Okay, thanks.
All right, I believe that brings us to school.
Great job, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
So,
good luck.
Yep, great job.
Appreciate it.
Feel free to stay and be entertained with a few other presentations here if you'd like.
You probably won't be entertained.
Hi, James. I know you had a long day. Is that? So, school of choice. Last year, we had six students. I'm sorry, 2 years ago. So, last year at this time, I presented and said, hey, we had six students that didn't want to come back to us. Okay, and that was when, you know, students that we look at money that we had had, you know, from that year prior. This year, school of choice, we had four. So, four kids in our system that said, we don't want to come back to Monroe Public Schools. So they're asked to go somewhere else.
Is that one of the, we got the email on, or?
No.
No.
Never that lucky, Larry. Stop.
No, that wouldn't be that's not the one there. But, so I share that because that's, you know, for us to launch with that is, and when we get to look at school choice, parameters that we have is we automatically release students that have siblings in another district. So, you know, my brother's already in a school district, that student and I get, and I'm going there too. It's an automatic release. If an employee works there. And so when we started really looking at these numbers, we had ones that were automatics stepping out. And so we had some that when we called the word cleanup, we had 12 students that were in cleanup, which means that they had already been in that other district, and so they might have been there for 1 or 2 years. That's just, it needed to be cleaned up. And so when we really get down to it, and this year, this last year, we have to take care of ourselves, is what are the students that we need to really try to keep always here, which are students that are leaving the parochial system and choosing then to go to another district. We had 22 students electing that, and then this year, and last year we had 20, and then this year we had kindergartners or GSRP, and that one's always a big one because that one last year we had 20, this year we had 16, and it really comes down to where they did GSRP prior and or their daycare was at. And so that's been the big one. For example, lots of times daycare is the grandparents. And so, so that was nice to see that instead of seeing 20 kids last year that had left for that reason, it was only 16. So it's a matter of us taking care of ourselves. The flip is, though, we have 25 new students school choicing in. Of that 25, 17 or 18 of them are brand new to our system. So when we look at, okay, how many are we losing? That's dollars gone, four gone, and then it's either 17 or 18 coming in. That's new dollars coming in. Those other ones were already in our system, and so might have been in here for a temporary release or something like that. So we'd already had that funding. So when we begin to look at new funding, okay, it's roughly a plus 15, 16 students or of money. And I think that's what we always have to think about is monies that we saw in our system prior. So it's coming along. Our ultimate goal is really working on the parochial private and the GSRP that, you know, those kids are choosing us rather than another system and or whatever else be. Oddly enough, what we still haven't seen is the denials. So, for example, in Ida and airport schools, those elementaries are full. And so I'm anticipating we'll see some denials that airport will have and even in Ida. This year, though, we did receive 7 students from Ida, okay, here. Mason 6, Airport 4.
That's because they came from the new football field that we have.
Well, that's a high probability.
Inside joke.
It is there. But the ones that I love today, I signed off on 4 of them from Jefferson. and tour at the high school level, and it's all because of the high school offerings and what we have to, the vastness of what we have to offer.
The ones that came.
Come in here. Yep. So they're, you know, they electing to leave the other district because of what we have to offer. So, and it's not football, because you cannot do it due to athletics. So I'm going to take care of that one right now on tape. So if we get drilled with it, you too. So we're doing the right stuff right there. I think what's making me happy to see is that that number of kids that are in our system that our parents are saying, hey, I want to go somewhere else, okay? And that number, like I said, last year was 6. This year it's 4.
Do we know where those 4 are going?
We do. It's in a more detailed, real. We keep a very detailed roll of where people are, where they're heading.
Are they staying in county or going somewhere?
That's all in county.
In county.
Yeah, okay. It's all in county. We also have the other one that was an interesting one is we had 6 students to Whiteford, and it's one family.
Oh,
Whiteford.
Yeah, and so I think that was a family member down
school
there.
School of choice is already closed, right? So if people want to go, they can't. Why is it so short? Like, why isn't there more time?
It starts right there, beginning of April, and runs through the end of June here. So. Yeah, all those months.
If I think people don't start thinking about it until the end of the
So
year.
What happens is
and
we do
when they start thinking about it, they're like, you know.
So what happens is they do have the option to put in what's called a one year hardship release. And so they'll petition the superintendent in that district about why they view they need to go to that other school. And so I take that and we look closely at it, have a conversation lots of times with the parents about it. And so there are parents that will fill that out, and there's times that we don't grant it, there's times that we do grant it, because there's some that go, for example, our house, we're getting divorced, and this school sits right between where my ex-husband lives and I'm living. And so for more of accommodation, and or we'll have we do see them come in where hardship where we have bought property, we are building, or we're in the process of buying that home, and we want to start there the beginning of the school year. So it's like, well, I'm not going to, we know that you don't want to start a child out in one building district and force it and then have them move, because we know that there's a gap right there and we don't want to harm kids. Yeah. So we look at each case one-on-one. So at this point in time, we'll have those individual hardship cases come in and we analyze that and determine.
So Waterloo didn't play into this at all?
No. Hmm. No. Yep, go ahead.
Okay.
To break it down further, they do give reasons, many of them on their forms. One of them was
bless you.
Thank you. Caregivers are located in Petersburg, which is Summerfield.
Okay. Yeah.
Another one, the parent attended the school and they want their child to go there.
Mm-hmm.
The other two are currently virtual and they wanted a smaller school setting for their senior year.
I think it's nice that we had some students wanted to come into our system because of what we offered. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really good.
No, it's honestly exactly, exactly. Sorry, I'm trying to get my.
No, we just a side comment.
I'd be interested if it's related to our CTE programs.
That's a good question.
So the one was.
Was it?
So the one that came in that I signed off today is due to CTE.
Yeah.
And the vastness of
our
CTE program.
It's got to be an attraction.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Think about football field.
Okay.
But the other thing is that we offer orchestra. We offer.
Oh, yeah. No, if you look at it.
In house building, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Dave, I cannot get this to. My computer's not wanting to grab it up.
The home builders course.
Yep.
Yeah, the VIA, right? If I have a hand there.
Can we do a straw vote on turning?
we'll send a text
we're not Tim. Allowed to do straw votes, but I've got some straw we can set on fire.
Okay. So the next item for you is our student presentation, and I'm hopefully I can get this thing to. I'm not sure why it doesn't want to load. And so in your packet, you're going to see the presentation we've done. I think this will be the third time. Right. And so this is our taking our iReady data. And we have, so the four different tests that we, testing periods that we did. Remember, at the beginning of the year is the beginning, towards the latter part of November, latter February, and then we had May. And so if you look at that very first page right here, this is the reading, and you can take a look at tier one. If we look at tier one down the line, kindergarten 26, and these are tier one, 13% for first grade, 14% for second, 25% for third, 15% at fourth, 12 at fifth, 18, six, so forth. We slide it over to the end of the year, and then I'm just going to go down to the percent of an increase right there on that, you know, percent of students that are functioning there in that tier one level. 47% in a growth there, or 73% are in kindergarten, are functioning right there at kindergarten, that we right there at tier one, okay? Mm-hmm. First grade, 53%, or we had a 40% growth. The second grade is 37%, or 23% growth for the whole school year. Third grade, 45%, is in that tier one. You know, we'll see, again, back to the one question that's always come up, about, okay, well, how will that correlate right there? And so knowing that that was done at the end of May, and a month and a half earlier, we had the MSTEP test. So what does that look like here at the end of August? So we'll have those results. September, we'll do a presentation to see if there's much, how close of a correlation there could be for that on that item. Fourth grade, 28, and so forth. So if you take a look at that, we have two grade levels, fourth and fifth grade, that are still in the 28, 29% in that tier one. I think what we really look at is that tier three. Is our tier three getting smaller? And when we begin to look at it throughout the whole year, that is, and we're shoving it. So that, again, each year we're looking at that growth of that these kids are, that we're staying in that low 20s, and that I'm really hopeful that next year that tier three, for some of these grade levels, we're seeing them in the teens, and that push has happened. Our one unique grade level is seventh grade. Angela, I'm sorry, you're sitting here, that's why it happened. Andrea, and it's both A's, you know, she's diving into further data onto what's going on in that seventh grade right there, because they didn't move in comparison to a lot of other grade levels, you know, a lot right there. And so that grade level is a question mark, as it is already in your building. And so it's, okay, what's happening in that seventh grade? There. We do know that, remember, as students do get older, that potential of a lot of growth, it's marginal. So instead of, you know, where we could see down there at that second grade level, we might see that 10, 15, 20% growth right there. Here, you may not see that as kids get older. So that space is there. But our student data is moving up. In the next set of graphs,
we did quite well in kindergarten and first grade. I mean, what do we attribute that to? As long as we're looking at the flip side,
yep.
I mean, it'd be nice to say we're doing something right in this, yep. And that's what it is.
Was it kindergarten just brand new kids?
Well, yeah, but at the beginning of the year, there's 26 and...
I think it depends a lot of whether they've been in young fives or how well their parents have.
Yep.
There's all prepared before they come.
Which is fine if that's what we find. If that's what the data supports, right, then we know what to do.
We would also share though too that when we look at the work that our teachers did this year, with on the side with phonics and also with bringing in our staff developers, we put in a lot of PD for our teachers this year, And that PD is paying off right here, as you can see, too, because it's not just the students. It's the elevation of our teachers. And one of the things we talked about recently was that typically a teacher will hit their stride at years 3, 4, 5, right in that range right there. And we look at it going, we can't wait that long. And so that's why we're dumping so much PD into our younger teachers right now, because we have to ramp them up a lot faster. Only because when we have such a large percentage of teachers, I mean, when over 50% of our staff is young, less than 5 years of experience, That's why we're putting so much time into them. But I can ask Andrea that question if she has some points of why, what would be the contributing factors.
And if it is the phonics, maybe, which is mentioned, that'd be good to know, too, because, I mean, they just changed. That was 2 years ago, that day. I forgot the lady's name.
I thought it was a year ago.
Was it a year ago?
I thought it was, what? Too.
Yeah. When we brought in...
What's her name?
Yeah, the famous lady.
That was last year.
Lucy Calkins, yeah.
Thank you.
She added phonics last year.
Was it last year she added?
Yeah.
She added it last year. Yep.
Yeah, and it was being trialed in some of our classes right away.
Okay. Yep. And we also did some other supplementals in there, too, but I'll ask Andrea to, in a board group, to provide
that. That would be great.
Here's a question. When you talk about the teachers reaching their stride 3 to 4 years,
yeah,
are you providing feedback to the universities, teaching courses?
Our county and Washtenaw County get invited to about every 6 weeks to a luncheon at Eastern Michigan, and we remind them that all the time.
Yeah, because they should be hitting their stride faster.
They should, and what we're seeing is just that our...
I expected my engineers to be hitting stride in a few months.
Well,
teacher ed programs are required to follow their students after graduation continue to look at their assessments.
Yeah, I realize part of it is the younger teachers are going to take longer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like when my wife got her degree, she was 30-some years old and had 2 kids.
Yep.
So she knew how to handle kids right away when she got in the classroom.
The classroom management, so you take into a lot of factors. So, you know, year one, they're understanding how everything works, okay? And we have some teachers that come in and they're already, it's going, but then it's still, though, they're having to understand that. But when I say talk about getting that stride, they've created their own voice and what that voice is like inside that classroom. Mm-hmm. But that professional development was needed right there just to make sure we had captured it. Yeah. So,
So I pulled out the last assessment data that we received, and I'm trying to compare the two. I remember last time one of the conversations was, what are the assessment tools? And we were talking whether it's objective or subjective.
Yep.
And the switch into a more subjective assessment, including, like, even what James had said, was the verbal assessment of change, even a verbal assessment of reading.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And whatnot. So when did those assessments, from this time when we talked about it, to this time, when did the biggest change of those assessments happen?
So it never changed. The teachers have always been giving the iReady along with doing the progress monitoring and, I wish I had Terry sitting right over there. There's another where teacher's literally sitting right next to the child, and so the child's reading with them, and they're... It's a benchmark assessment. Thank you. I should be able to get that. Mm-hmm. So, but right here, we're showing iReady because iReady is so similar to MSTEP. That's why, so this is going in front of the computer, one-on-one, and they don't have the teacher sitting there doing any coaching. This is the student doing it. So this is, so that's what we're showing here.
I'm looking at the numbers here, and I'm looking at the reading from last year in semester 2 even, and the numbers are very similar.
So this is
so
the
go ahead.
So
these are last year's numbers, and these are this year's numbers. So when I look at the chart and I go, when I start looking at trimesters and grades, I'm trying to see,
we've only started doing that presentation this year.
This is up to
this is this year's data.
So
right here.
So these numbers match this.
Yes.
Yeah. So shouldn't you see an improvement? So I guess here's what I'm looking at. If this second trimester, so you're saying this second trimester matches here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then this is the third trimester.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a continuation of that.
So
data.
This is one. This is looking at a student for one whole year, okay? Or actually, the students per grade level from a whole year snapshot, and we provide with the testing data for each snapshot. So then in the pie graphs, all we gave you the beginning of the year to the end of the year, because We just wanted to show that to you in a graph format for the whole year. And I'm not going to go back over that because it's just it's redundant because it's already went there. If you flip over to the math.
So,
go ahead, ma'am.
I'm trying to see the progression here. So
yep.
Here's kindergarten at the beginning of the year, and
yep.
then it goes straight to the third
to the right.
trimester.
Yes, ma'am.
So when I look at second trimester bubbled, like this circle.
Yes, ma'am.
And I look at semester three tri-level, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of difference
yep.
in the appearance of those bubbles.
So if you look at it right there on, go back to your this other page right here.
Right.
You're going to see that in second trimester, we had 53% in Tier 1, and in the third trimester, we moved to 60% of our students in Tier 1.
I thought the green was on level.
So the green, these are the tiers. So we think about it.
So I thought
yep.
they're meeting it is yellow, on level is green, and red, these are what the notes are.
Yep. Yep. So if you look at it right here, so the green is our what we would consider that 60% of students in kindergarten right there do not need any intervention. So they're functioning and mm-hmm. kindergarten is working great for them. If you go down to the next level, and that's at Tier 1. So that's your normal everyday instruction. And so in that kindergarten, 40% of the students still need it, just Tier 2. If we look at the first grade at the end of the year, 42% fine right there in Tier 1, 49% needed that Tier 2, 9% needed that Tier 3, which is a higher level of an intervention that's happening. So it's more intervention there. So again, what we're trying to do is keep moving people to the left. So you want to shrink the red into the yellow to that green. And if we look at the beginning of the year, though, where they sat and then where we got that grade, where the teachers got to the grade level 2 as a whole, that's when you look at that final column, far right, that shows you the percent of students of growth for the year.
I'm gonna Does that growth sure. mean from one level to the next, or I think we discussed
it's
before, it's even for, within the level.
So within kindergarten, so 47% of the kindergartners, so when we started the year out, 26% of the kindergartners are in Tier 1, but by the end of the year, we had 73% of the kindergartners mm-hmm. had progressed to Tier 1, and which means we had a 47% growth, 47% of our students grew year.
If I can, Darla, I believe my notes from memory from Andrea's last presentation was that green is you're meeting your grade level expectations.
Yep.
Yellow is that you're close to your expectations,
partially
proficient, and then your red would be not proficient.
Yep.
So maybe that's what my trouble is, because I wrote
yes.
meeting.
Yeah,
green.
No.
So I have
your meet. Yep, you have them flip flop. Meeting is your green.
See what happens?
Meeting or exceeding. I think.
Meeting
yes.
or exceeding. Yes, that's
yep.
correct. And then yellow would be your partially proficient that are meeting some grade level expectations, but not all of them.
Yep.
And then your red would be not proficient.
So the yellow, the green.
The green is where we would like to see the majority of our students.
No wonder I mixed up.
Yep. So I heard that when you were speaking. So I just wanted
Thank you.
To throw that out there.
Okay.
Much appreciation there. So again, lots of movement. Now, again, for us, this is just using the test. That's an computerized test. We'll see how it what transfers over to on our M-STEP results.
Yep.
And there from one year to the next.
Yep.
On the math side, very similar percentages right there. Again, when you if you look at the math and go right down through, you're going to see, okay, when we get down to our seventh grade, and these are our kids going into eighth, we had 11% of our students move from Tier 1 through the year. And so when we see the rest of the grade levels having a lot more movement. So that seventh grade, there's a question there that we have to answer. And that same moment in time is beginning to really look at how to get more of those students that sits in that Tier 2 over so that they're not saying that they're not ready for high school, but it does pose just a question. That's
now
all.
We switched to Envision Math at what point?
So that Envision Math just went to kindergarten through
fifth grade last year.
So this is the year there.
Okay.
So I would anticipate that next year at this time that you're going to see your elementary numbers look even better.
Okay.
Middle school is going to come, okay? 2 years from now is when you're going to see your middle school really go.
It'll progress up.
Yep.
Okay.
But to that point, though, is if we begin to look here, the percent that's in the red, you know, that number is not, it's not exactly where we want it to be, but it's not, we're not looking at, except for that fifth, that darn seventh grade, there's no one else in the 50%. Everyone else is, you know, in that 30s, that eighth grade sits at 42. So, you know, we have a lot more potential because we don't have such a high number right there in the red. So,
you know, last year was, if we would look at the seventh grade scores, I mean, would it kind of be reflective of this year's seventh grade?
So one of the things I'm asking out of Andrea is to take and create the exact same charts off of our numbers last year. So that way then when we begin to do the strategic plan work, that we can actually then have these 2 years of data points. So then next year when you guys look at it, you can look at going, okay, this is what our kids look like in kindergarten, then their first grade year, and then we have our second grade numbers this fall for them, right? That's what we want to see right there, is how then cohorting them like that, what that begins to look like. Yep. Yeah. So that's what's coming there.
Did you have last year?
This is, well, this is the M steps, but.
So what it means is we want, obviously the tier one is our base instruction. And if that percentage continues to increase, that base instruction means it's doing exactly what it should do. And also it gives us a indicator of the potential for where we could be looking at our percentages of our students being hitting the proficiencies on the M step. Okay. And the other flip is too, is what kinds of resources we need to put into each grade level. And so, for example, if we're looking at math second grade and we're looking at it tier three, it's like, okay, well, we only have 16% of our population sitting there. So that means we're not having to put as much into that one versus third grade when we have 25% of our population in tier three. So it also focuses where you're going to be putting other resources. All right. So the last item I have is just giving you an update. Last year, we resolved Raisinville parent loop. And this year, we're close. Where is that thing hanging out at? Sorry, it's an email. I just had to find it.
Raisinville's getting better, though. I mean, it's a
Raisinville is better. So, well, if parents would just show up when Scott schedules them, we wouldn't have any cars out on the road.
Oh, they're there at 3 o'clock.
I know. Yeah. But so in your packet is this document right here. And so what's going to happen at Manor, and we're showing you, okay, the current Manor campus. And so if you really think about it, and Ben had the opportunity to go over here at the end of the day, parents are over in this area and they're all in the front. It is a congested mess. I mean, if you don't get over there before 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you might as well not go.
Yeah.
And I practiced at least three times last year. So what
we're people that live there, like they're pretty much boxed in.
Yeah. Oh, they're boxed. Yep. So what? Yep. So we went had a conversation with the city and around an idea of, they have a park right here. This really dark green grass. That's the park area. Is what the potential to bring a driveway right up along this side right here and make this now the parent loop, this area here, okay, so that they come through and right out, okay? They already are on all the roads, okay?
So they're everywhere.
So what we're going to do is I'm going to go to the next screen. It's a whole lot easier. So if you go to your next page, you're going to see it in red, and it might help you. Oh, the arrows.
Right now, as speaking from the Manor parent, right now the loop goes down the main.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
This is the best way to show it.
Down here, and then it comes into the staff lot,
yep.
And then out.
And they pop all up in the other, okay. In the other parts
and
there.
Sometimes it's backed up, like it used to back up all the way to Dollar Tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a mess. So what we're talking to is the city, and so step one is to have a conversation with the city about us. I'm going to just step up here to the easement because she did it. Mm-hmm. And for us to begin to have a driveway here, so it would be an easement. And they said, you know what, this could have been a better time because this park is going to be getting redone. Mm. Yeah. Okay. It's like, well, okay, this is beautiful. So
what we're going to do is we're sharing this with you right now because our next step will be going to the city to have finalized conversation, have a conversation with these homeowners right here about what we're talking about doing, because what will happen is this will have an easement here, and this will be a gravel driveway this year, and then next summer it'll be paved. That's the one request that the city would have, is that that would end up being paved right there. But we want to talk to the residents about what we're looking at doing, so they're fully aware that in the morning and in the afternoon that these there will be cars in here. The beautiful side is that this becomes that new parallel. Now, there might be parents trying to get in here because that's what they'll do to bring themselves in. But what we don't have then is everybody down here. So that now makes it when we bring our buses in here, they're in and out easily. If we have an evacuation, we have anything else that happens, we don't have that congestion that we have seen up here. We have a rough estimate of what this cost would be right here, and that's about $25,000. That's the excavation and then bringing the rock in, building it up so it's prepped and ready for asphalt for 1 year from now. Okay.
That's your.
But like I said, our next steps are to just go and have a conversation, confirming everything with the city. The city wants to walk alongside us and have that conversation with these residents, sharing with them what we're looking at doing. This is about 600 from here down to here is 625 feet. So if you think about the number of cars, that means lined up there, you're talking about 35-ish cars roughly, bumper to bumper. What would happen is, and this is what I really like, right here is where the drop-off would be. So if you've been out at Manor, I know a couple of you have, they have cones set up and how they get the kids out, so they can move a lot of cars through really quickly. Well, Brittany would do the exact same thing, and so this becomes the entrance area for where the kids go in. So they would be dropping off right here, and then everyone's just exiting out. So it's actually a really nice area because now we're not going to have traffic. The only thing we'll have to pay attention to right here will be crossing guard in that area due to now where the traffic, where we used to have crossing guards here because we had so much traffic down that area. We have to make sure we have it up there.
Would they let us do the driveway too wide?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Would you
fit through there? I don't think.
Yeah, you'd have to bring them back together. You'd have to have somebody standing out there. You.
One right there.
Be wrecked.
Because 35 cars is not going to be.
No. So what they do is they'd just be lined up right here on the road like they are.
Oh.
So they just,
gotcha.
They would be. This would be their line.
Okay, so we'd have seven
right there.
Okay.
What you don't have then is you don't have this traffic jam that sits up here where nobody can get into here.
It's gridlocked.
It is.
Can I approach the map?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I approach the map?
Permission granted.
So, thank you. So based on the Raisinville experience, and you experienced Manor, and I experienced Raisinville, here's what I see happening. All these cars are going in this road to come down this way while all these cars are...
Yeah.
Oh, did I write on that? No. All these cars are coming down that road. These people would be parked all the way down the street because they're going to start 45 minutes before the end.
Yeah.
So do you think, and that we've kind of thought about that too, is if all these parents show up, that's what I said, if you, from here to here, you have approximately 35 cars. You roll it out, you're looking at about 90 cars that would be sitting there.
Yeah, but how many cars do you sit at Raisinville?
Well, Raisinville is a different beast as far as the amount of traffic. We've got more buses that go here than we do at Raisinville.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But what I also anticipate, though, is we have also side streets here where people will be trying to come in. The reason why we're doing this again is we have all those cars there. So they'll just have to work through that turn as these people are leaving and then they're making their turn.
That's the only thing I
We should know how many cars typically pick up during the
day. I don't know that number for Manor. I knew it for Raisinville that it was.
We
like,
can get it.
I know
yeah,
it's.
Yeah, you have to apply, don't you? To say you're
yeah. Right.
I know since they added the. When they did the redistricting and we added those over there by St. Mary's, that was a lot of our parent transportation that would have been our problem, I think.
Probably other than.
So that reduced some of the parent moving. Mm-hmm. I think from a parent standpoint that's sat there, I think moving it over there gives you a longer distance to have additional cars. Because if you think right now, in front of the they have to come out, there's only like six cars in there, and then maybe seven or eight in the lot, and then the rest are all lined up. So I think this is giving you a significantly longer length of traffic. And then moving it from Lorraine to Donnelly, I think would help with some of the traffic.
Some of them, not too many.
Because Lorraine is a lot busier, that's the drag.
Yeah, I would like most of them to go.
But, I mean, there's no, where Manor sits, there's no good place for a parent loop, but I think this would certainly be an improvement potentially.
Oh, I agree.
The other thing that would happen too that Scott did was about down in this vicinity here, he put a person with a radio, and so they were radio head of what families were coming up. So then those kids then were getting ready right here at stage, so that when those cars were pulling up, they were walking them out.
So it's like Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A,
fool around.
You can get your Chick-fil-A menu.
They'll keep the same thing going right
there. There you go, yeah. We'll need some fans out there.
So we would anticipate a lot, that this would actually move kids, the families in and out of there a lot faster too. Well, they already got the other stuff there.
Oh, so it's to them a solution.
It's like a solution to keep track moving. The other thing is, Tim has already been out there and looked at it. Everything runs, everything runs that direction. So we don't have to worry about like the driveway, the water going this way, it's already running that direction.
But if you build it up, will the water in the neighborhood?
Even, he said, based on the, if you were to stand back there, you'd actually see how fat, it's a good slope. And he was not, weren't too concerned with that there. So I just wanted you to be aware that the goal is to bring this to you at our August 13th board meeting for you. Once we're gonna sit down here the next couple of days more with the city, going, okay, let's talk about our next steps, because they've got to do some approval for easement. Oh, and there'll be we would have a gate down here that'd be open and closed beginning of the day and at the end of the day, so that way you know the traffic.
It's gonna be fenced in?
Not fenced in, it'll just be a gate right here, so people can't drive up through there during the night or even during the school day.
Okay.
So that would be open and shut beginning of the day.
That's a good idea.
I like the dual lane idea, though, they'll get more cars out there.
That's good, we may need to look at that there.
Because you ride 35 cars, it's not much.
Right, so if you dual lane it, and then you to get out of there. Yeah.
And they do it at Raisinville.
Yeah.
My concern is, I don't know what the criteria is gonna be for approval from these eight houses, but what if one person objects vehemently?
So we want to,
it's gonna kill it.
It's not, we're gonna have a deep conversation around what we're trying to do right there. The only thing that could happen is we'll have to take a look at that fence that's there, and it's a privacy fence, making sure that it is a good privacy fence.
Okay.
So we may need to address the fence down the road just from the privacy side, but that's where I think we're gonna sit with it.
Homeowners are gonna be a little bit concerned about how that affects their property values.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's probably the biggest concern.
Yep, but we're just trying to problem solve a big problem.
Custer next.
Custer is next. So I know I want to be done in 2 minutes with it.
Yep, you got to be. We need a 5 minute break.
We got to do a break. So the Custer one, and I'm going to need your guys' help on doing a little bit of research. What we've been looking at is going directly across from Fenmore. Okay, you have the driveway out from our buses and entering there, and doing a similar look. I had a person recently, though, tell me that was like an old Indian burial ground.
No.
Okay.
That actually, according to my dad, that was actually part of our family burial ground, but...
There we go.
And he went out there with some probes, and he doesn't believe that either.
Okay.
So Tom's giving up all rights that he may have to that.
That's I just heard that.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
It's actually back in the corner, more towards the tracks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of room at Custer, though, so we...
Yeah. We do.
We have a lot of room.
We do, but we were looking at if we can get them in that area and then bring them, you know where the parking lot's at right there for the soccer? We can do a dual lane right there.
How would that
and control
the railroad tracks, though?
Oh, we would get
that's
them.
That's a short area there.
We're working...
You'd have to put a culvert in there.
We would have to put a culvert. That's going to take a little bit more work, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but that whole area...
Just drive real fast. Fly right over.
I didn't know it was that deep. Man, I still get...
But yeah, that one's up next right there to get solved. But trying to do it on their own grounds is not going to be able to happen. The current driveway, it can't happen. So we got to come up with another plan for them. So that's all I have tonight, sir.
All right. Move to adjourn the work session. Can I get a motion?
Second.
Show of hands. All right. It's 6:55. We adjourned.